Hi, I'm Kim Cotola. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Cradle My Heart Radio. There are many more podcasts available online at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Cotola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins.
And now, Kim Cotola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you so much for joining us here at Cradle My Heart Radio, where our mission is preventing abortion and helping those it hurts. And really, the positive way to say that is if we accomplish what we've set out to do with this program, we will be saving lives and we will be healing hearts hurt by abortion and healing hearts hurt by unintended pregnancy, because there are so many issues that surround that. And God's love lifts us all, including people like myself who have had an abortion. And I think that the people that I know who've been healed in the Lord and are able to speak are some of the most effective voices. Some of the most effective voices are also those who are intervening at the 11th hour, who are trying to reach women who are ambivalent and who are not decided or perhaps have been coerced. Some women who are looking for a way out even as they are walking in to an abortion facility. And we've talked on the program before about sidewalk counseling, but I want to talk with today somebody who's been engaged in this aspect of pro-life rescue work for a long time. And this is the executive director of Pro-Life Action Ministries in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. Brian Gibson, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you for having me on the show.
We have talked about sidewalk counseling with some of your friends and colleagues. Walter Hoy has been a guest. We've had Brian Walker on the program. And I know that you work arm in arm with these men and others. But just give us the background of Pro-Life Action Ministries, how it all began, and what are the roots of this organization?
Oh, goodness. Well, in early 1981, it was actually, we marked the beginning of the organization in March of 1981. There were four young men who were in college at the time, who had come under conviction that all the other work that was going on in the pro-life movement, however good it was, women were still walking into abortion facilities and having abortions, having their children killed. And they came under the conviction that it was important to reach out for those lives that were being lost and for those women and the men involved to help them as well. So we actually started in that early time in 1981, the very first organized sidewalk counseling program in the United States. And over the years, it has certainly developed and grown, and we try to learn from our past and our history, and both our victories and our mistakes and failures, and learn how to reach out to women better and so forth. But that's that basic premise that every day at these abortion facilities where they are doing abortions, that there are human beings made in the image and likeness of God who deserve the love and care and attention of Christians to try and save their lives and be a voice for them, as well as for those who are having abortions, to be there for them so that they don't endure this terrible deed as a sin in their lives, as well as the trauma and everything else that abortion is. So we're out there trying to offer the love of God and the help that's available so that abortions don't take place.
You know, and I like that, only new mistakes. We're all hoping to only make new mistakes. And some of the tactics of the past, we've either found haven't worked or they're just not effective in our time. I was so struck by the story of the roots of Pro-Life Action Ministries because I don't think you could deploy a tactic like the four young men deployed back in the day. They actually went and did a sit-in inside a Planned Parenthood facility, if I've got that right.
That was the first action they did. It was shortly after that, though, the realization was that going inside and being present inside was not going to be the effective means to save the lives of the babies, and that's why the sidewalk counseling was created right on the heels of that that event. It was, you know, how could you keep going out and being arrested? How do you keep sustaining something? And so it was decided, you know, like within days after that, that the real way to go about this would be to be present on the public sidewalk where it's lawful, peaceful presence, and offer the help to the women to dissuade them from having their abortions.
And I love that, though, because they did what God had put on their hearts, and then they made a quick correction, which has led to a model that is still in place. How many years now later, over 30 years later?
Yeah, 35
years.
Yes.
That, you know, that I want everybody listening to catch that. If you decide, I've got to do something, and you go do something, and then you realize, well, wait, that wasn't it, that's okay. You know, start somewhere. We've got to start somewhere as individuals on this. And so the model for sidewalk counseling has evolved through the years, but it's a very scriptural activity. It's a very biblically based outreach. Share that with us, Brian, because some people may not understand the biblical mandate for this.
Well, first of all, from Proverbs 24, we are told to rescue those who are being led to the slaughter. And actually, when you get later in the verse, it talks about how if we fail to act in a time of adversity, our strength will depart from us. And I believe that, you know, the strength of Christianity in our society has been weakened, certainly in a great part because of the response to this horrible injustice that has gone on for so long in our nation has yet to really receive the full response that the Christian people should bring to it. I'm not trying to be condemnatory about this or judgmental in any way. I think it's just a factual reality that our call to deal with serious injustices is very strong in our biblical understanding. And when we fail to, as Proverbs 24, 11, and 12 talk about, then we miss something very important here in our life. Also in Matthew 18, where we have that last judgment scene, and Jesus talks about what you do for the least of my brothers and sisters, you do for me. And certainly among the least, we can count those who are the most defenseless and the most innocent in our society, the unborn. And so we have an overwhelming scriptural responsibility to deal with this injustice. Now, how do we do it? And the method that we employ primarily is the sidewalk counseling, as well as prayer vigils and prayer responses out there where we involve the leadership of the church, the pastors, to be present with us.
Mm-hmm. Sure, and I want to get into the nuts and bolts of that, but I just want to add one thing to what you said there in Proverbs 24, because I recently studied in depth with Pastor John Ensor, and he helped us see that verse goes on to say, if you pass by and say, we didn't know, will not he who guards your life know it? And what this means is none of us gets a pass. None of us gets to say, that's not my concern. I'm going to let those women have their privacy, and I'm going to allow them to make their own choices in life. Now, this is a point of view that we hear, and it puts us on defense as Christians, defenders of women and children here. And many people will be persuaded by that, and they'll walk away. But what Pastor Ensor helped us to see, Brian, is that will not he who guards your life? I mean, I think there's a real fear of getting involved on the parts of many. And there's the assurance right there that you don't have to worry about yourself when you step out to rescue. That if we're doing this in faith, and if we trust in our Lord, we know we can't lose. And we have to be willing. And you know, Brian, you've actually, I think, had a physical encounter while doing sidewalk counseling a few years ago. Can you tell me that story? What happened there?
Well, yeah, if you're out there long enough, something odd happens. there was a man who was there with his girlfriend for an abortion. He had come outside of the Planned Parenthood abortion facility in St. Paul, and one of our other sidewalk counselors, we like the sidewalk counseling teams. We believe it's important to have two or three or more people out there at a time. And so One of the ladies that was sidewalk counseling started calling out to him, and he started coming at her very, very angrily and aggressively. And not so much my Christian training, but my gentlemanly training from my father jumped in into gear, and I called the attention to me so that he wouldn't go after a woman. So he came over to me, and I stayed several paces back from him. I didn't go toward him. Started addressing him as calmly and as respectfully as I could, but letting him know that we had help available. And he just got more angry. And eventually he came to me and took a couple punches at my chest. No harm was done to me at all. And the police were called, and he ended up having an arrest take place for that, the assault. But, sometimes things happen. And I think the more common negative response, and this is probably anybody that's listening, you go out to an abortion facility and you stand there in prayer. Nothing else. Stand there in prayer, nearby. Don't even have to be right by the driveway, just on the sidewalk nearby. The most common negative reaction you will get is somebody calling you number one with their hands.
So, one finger salute.
Yes. And,
right.
And I don't count them, but there's plenty that happen. But I noticed that there are just as many people who wave or toot their horn and thank us for being there,
sure,
as there are people who may want to say, make their statement with their hands like that.
And, more importantly, Brian, you have been able to quantify lives saved. You probably don't know all the lives saved, but this is effective ministry. You are saving lives. Tell us about some of the success stories of Pro-Life Action Ministries.
Well, with our sidewalk counseling, we actually intentionally document the baby's lives saved that we're able to document. And as you mentioned, we certainly have not been able to do it with all of them by any means, but over the years now, we are approaching 3,200 documented babies saved since we started doing this ministry in 1981. And the most of those have been since 1986. So it's over that period of time. This year, as of right now in 2016, we have documented 54 babies that have been saved. And, put it into real perspective, every mm-hmm. one of these that we call documented baby saved are children that were scheduled to be aborted. And
yes,
they were saved by sidewalk counselors, volunteers being out there praying and offering the love of God and the wealth of help that's available from the pro-life community and from the Christian churches. And the moms decided that very day to not go through with that abortion appointment, and they have remained steadfast in that decision and have given life to their children.
Praise God. I hope everybody listening is smiling as big as I am. But also, to put this in perspective, that's about, if I've got my math right, and it's never my strong suit, but that's about 100 babies a year over the course of 30 years.
Yes.
Is that
yes.
right?
It's, a little
okay,
bit more
but
than 100
think about
a year
this.
Average.
Yep. And so you're in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and Planned Parenthood has a real stronghold there. And I believe the last time I looked, it's about 3,000 babies killed a year in Minnesota with abortion. Is that right, Brian?
Well, actually, the numbers of abortions in the whole state are at just under 10,000 this year, this last year. The reports just came out. Planned Parenthood itself has been increasing the number of abortions they do each year, and they're now up to 5,000, a little more than 5,000 in 2015. So they continue to do
so
large numbers of abortions.
The need is great.
So, yes.
The need is great. And think if more could be reached, because I know that when people are asked, they say the main reason they chose abortion was economic. They express that in a number of ways, but it's more than three-fourths of those who answer that they were afraid of their economic future, which means they lack social support, which means someone making an invitation for help really can be life-saving, and it can be life-transforming to that woman as well as saving the life of the baby. Brian, let's talk about why things go bad on the sidewalk. And you do training. It's very, you're not going to have anybody sent out without strict protocols and strict training. And we can talk about that, but, you know, sometimes there's this stereotype that there are angry Christians on the sidewalk verbally assaulting women. What happens when things go wrong like that? Because I know that's not what you're about or promoting.
Correct. Yeah, it's the last thing we want to have happen, but it does happen. And unfortunately, the stereotype, there's actually somebody behind the stereotype. But on the fortunate side is that it is fairly rare. It's certainly rare in our area, but there are places where it does happen a little more frequently around the country. And I think what happens is people come to realize the grave evil that abortion really is. And once you understand that, you realize that in your heart of hearts, as a Christian, what do I do about it? You know, I need to do something. I got to go out there. And if they don't have guidance, if they haven't received the type of training we do, if they don't have the pastoral guidance that they need, they may go out and just be angry out there. And there is justification for a righteous anger toward abortion. The problem is what do we do with it? And unfortunately, if you go out there and express the anger, it isn't necessarily going to be righteous when you're done. And it is harmful. It's counterproductive. You cannot talk to a woman going into an abortion facility. You know, again, to look at this from the viewpoint of the woman, she's got a problem in her life. And whatever those problems may be that drive her to do something that's counter to her own maternal instincts, to go have her baby killed. And women know that's what they're doing when they go in there. They don't, you know, we don't say it that way on the sidewalk, but that's certainly what they know they're doing in their hearts. You know, if they've got those issues in their lives that have driven them to go against their own maternal instincts, to go to an abortion facility, the last thing they want to do is talk to some stranger standing on the sidewalk. So
right.
The demeanor we have when we're standing on the sidewalk.
Or be yelled at.
Well, that's even worse, you know. The demeanor we have becomes extraordinarily important. You know, we have to be welcoming. We have to be approachable. We have to be able to enter. The only way we can save the baby's life is to talk to the mom, to help her. And because the baby can't hear us, you know, the baby can't see us. The baby is inside the womb. So, you know, we have to be approachable for that woman. And we need to be able to get into a conversation with her in order to get enough to her information-wise that she will go and leave an abortion appointment that she's already scheduled and go to a pregnancy help center or go where else she can go, to a church, mm-hmm. to get the help that she needs. So, you know, yelling and being self-righteous and you know, judgmental and telling everybody, condemning them in their sin, standing out there, actually drives the women into the arms of the abortionist
sure.
to have the abortion.
Sure.
It's exactly the opposite of what you want to have happen.
Mm-hmm. Brian Gibson is the executive director of Pro-Life Action Ministries, one of the premier organizations that trains for empathetic and compassionate conversations that are life-saving outside of abortion businesses. And you train people that are deployed all around the country. I don't know about worldwide. You can tell us about the scope of the ministry, Brian. But if you want to know more, we have links at cradlemyheart.org. Brian, so take us through one of these conversations, because I'm thinking, you know, some of us may feel as though I can't do this out in public, but learning your methodology could help us have a conversation over a cup of coffee with someone at church that we know needs help. So how do these conversations unfold?
Well, let's walk through where I regularly sidewalk counsel myself, and this is a mega Planned Parenthood, one of the very large ones that they've been building around the United States for the past 4, 5, 6 years, and it's actually been built and designed to thwart sidewalk counseling. We were extraordinarily successful at their old location because of the logistics were set up where we could actually have conversations and talk to their clientele coming in very readily. Here they've designed it to make it very difficult. So we now have our primary contact point is the driveway as they drive in. So I will stand there. I will smile as I see the car approaching. And that's something I had to learn. It was hard to learn, but I had to learn to force myself to smile so I look pleasant and approachable. I wave. They start to stop. I motion like, roll your window down. And I've got a piece of literature that's designed just for them that we've put together for sidewalk counseling. I'll hand it to them, say that this is for you. Please read this before getting out of your car. And then if I have any more time in this conversation, because now we've got clinic escorts that want to get them away from me and to go in, and they're waving and telling them to drive in and so forth, I will then let them know that there's a help center nearby where all the services are no cost. That may be the entire contact I have with that person. So it's basically just trying to hand out this very powerful piece of information we've put together and get a word or two in. Now, if I do have an opportunity to say a few more things, I will let them know that God loves them, that there's a wealth of help available, that we care for them and their baby. I may let them know that they should demand to see the ultrasound that will be done in there that Planned Parenthood will hide from them. Sometimes that's enough for them to actually leave if they find out that Planned Parenthood is keeping information from them. Most of all, though, I'll be telling them of the help that's available no matter what their situation is and try and get them to go to a nearby pregnancy help center.
And so what if a woman were to say to you, I really don't think you can help me. My parents are going to kick me out unless I do this.
Oh, I love it when those are the easy questions. you're living at home, your parents, you know what, we'll go with you to go talk to your parents. We'll go with you, we'll talk to you. I think your fears are based on just fear and not reality. And even if the reality is that your parents would do that, we have places you can go to stay. So we can help you even in those situations.
So what if I say to you, you know what, if I keep talking to you, my boyfriend who's driving the car here is probably going to give me a black eye.
We'll help you get away
no,
from
she
your
may
boyfriend.
Whisper it
yeah.
to you, right? She's
yeah.
probably not going to
yeah.
say it outright like that, but she yeah. may signal that she's terrified of in an abusive relationship.
Right, and we do see that. That is often the cases where the boyfriend is actually the driving force behind the abortion. They're pushing it. Most often, though, the situation isn't so much that they're concerned about a physical abuse as they are the threat of the boyfriend is going to leave me. And and we already have so much information that's so clear that if you go ahead and go through with the abortion, he's going to leave you anyhow. You know, he already doesn't think well of you because you got pregnant when you shouldn't have. You know, and so if he's threatening that, then you need to get away from this guy because he doesn't care that much about you. Those are some of the things you have to get into conversations with, but it's hard to just give you a blanket answer to these because I would ask questions back. You know, I want to hear what they really are saying and find out what the real issues are as opposed to just giving answers. And that's the art of sidewalk counseling, is listening.
Right. I know you do a lot of training. I know you equip all sorts of organizations. Do you have an outreach just for pastors? Because you've mentioned how important pastors are, or would you encourage pastors to attend some of your other training sessions?
Well, we certainly would invite pastors to attend our training, and they're welcome to everything we do because we do want to have pastors' involvement, and we take seriously their critiquing of what we do. We have done that for a very, very long time, and so pastoral involvement is very important to us. The primary way we involve pastors in our work is we do these large prayer vigils and prayer activities out at the abortion facilities. And I guess my best example is we've been doing an all-day prayer vigil on Good Friday at Planned Parenthood for 28, 29 years now. And we invite 15 area pastors to come throughout the day, one each half hour throughout the day, and they lead us in scripture and in prayer. And so we'd like to have pastors actually come out and lead us in prayer, to come out and be the pastor, you know, do the thing that they are trained to do, which is to be our shepherds and to lead us in prayer, and give us encouragement and so forth. And what I find is that when the pastors come out and do this, they're emboldened in their own work when it comes especially to pro-life preaching and so forth back at their churches.
And so what are your training opportunities that are coming up? I think this is going to be airing mid-August, somewhere around there. Are there some upcoming training opportunities the fall of 2016?
Well, September 6th, we have a sidewalk counseling training seminar, a full seminar on training in the Twin Cities. It's located at the University of St. Thomas in this fall, and they can contact our office to get involved in that. The other thing that we're going to be doing is we will be starting a 40 Days for Life later in September and going all the way into early November, where we will have constant prayer out at Planned Parenthood that entire time.
Okay, so I hope that you have been inspired listening to our guest, Brian Gibson, Executive Director at Pro-Life Action Ministries. If you want to learn more, go to cradlemyheart.org. Thank you so much for being our guest today on Cradle My Heart. Now stay with us. Coming up here on Faith Radio, we'll open up the phones and take your calls. 1-800-811-3003 here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
Safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. This is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken again, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
Thank you so much for being with us here on Cradle My Heart Radio on the Faith Radio Network, and also we are live on Facebook. If you want to join us so you can leave a comment on my Facebook feed, that would be great, because I've got an interactive segment planned for you. I want to hear from you, and it's just facebook.com/Kim Cotola. The live feed is public, so anybody can join and leave a comment for me, and I would love to have you do that. Want to know if you were able to listen to our featured interview that opened the program on Faith Radio. We spoke with Brian Gibson of Pro-Life Action Ministries about pro-life counseling, sidewalk counseling, people who volunteer to go and have caring conversations with men and women as they're about to go to an appointment at the facility. And so there are a lot of misconceptions about what that work is. There are some who are not giving an optimal Christian witness because of some of the tactics that they would employ on the sidewalk. So this is the question for you. Do you consider yourself pro-life, and have you ever done anything like that? If you want to call us at 1-800-811-3003, the phones are open now, 1-800-811-3003. Or go on to Facebook slash Kim Cotola and leave a comment there, and we'll try and put this on the air. You know, my story in a nutshell, if you've never heard it before, is that I had an abortion when I was 23 years old. And the one thing that I would say in response to our guest, Brian Gibson, he said, you know, women know that they're going in to take the life of their children, and they're acting against the maternal instinct. And I would say I had entered into a willful ignorance that walking in, I still really was not convinced that I was going to be taking a life. So I don't know if that fits you. If you want to share your story and talk about that, we certainly can. But having done that, I knew immediately before the procedure began that what I was about to do was wrong, but I just didn't have the wherewithal to stop at that point. So I had a lot of guilt because I knew better, so to say, walking away from that experience. But I didn't become pro-life for a lot of years later, maybe 20, 23 years later. And that it was after becoming a Christian, and it was after reaching out to help other people hurt by abortion. In the beginning, I really wasn't pro-life. I didn't know what that meant. To me, now, what that means is that I will defend the lives of children yet to be born by helping their mothers. That's what it is to be pro-life. There are lots of ways that that can be expressed. It can be through messaging, as I do in media, or it could be on sidewalk counseling. You may want to engage in a legislative effort. There are lots of policy makers. There are people who are in the pregnancy help movement that are making the pregnancies possible, because sometimes people have very real barriers that they feel would prevent them. So tell me, what's your motivation? Do you consider yourself pro-life? And if so, why? What drew you into it? 1-800-811-3003. And it's good to see that we have Stacy and Bruce and Hope on Facebook. Thank you for joining us for the live feed tonight. We did our first one last week and got almost 1,000 views, and that was great. We weren't even really expecting that. But we do have a live stream if you want to call and have your voice on the radio program, and that's myfaithradio.com as a way to listen online. And then you can call at 1-800-811-3003. We always try to make a pro-life resource available, too. And tonight we have Stand for Life, the student edition. And this is a way to have conversation with friends, family, people you might encounter at school, wanting to have whether or not abortion is moral. Is it morally right or wrong? Is it something that we should do? Is it something we need to be concerned about? What's the real concern here? And one of the things that I do, so the number to call the radio station is 1-800-811-3003, 800-811-3003, or drop us a comment on Facebook. Tell us why you're pro-life. What's your motivation? You know, for me, there were a lot of years when I was a bystander. And whenever I go and speak to organizations, especially for pregnancy center fundraisers, this is the theme that I strike, that I said, you know, well, I'm against abortion, but I don't think I should be able to tell other people what to do. Now, that was a defense mechanism because I wasn't healed of the abortion in my past. And it seems to me that that's where a lot of people are right now. And if that describes you, that's great. Let me know about that, too, because I think people are afraid to jump into somebody else's story, right? And even, I mean, the Bible says in Proverbs 26, it says, Proverbs 26:17 says, whoever meddles in a quarrel not his own is like one who takes a passing dog by the ears. Like, this isn't my fight. That's what a lot of people seem to think. But the problem is that with abortion, it's a life and death issue. And I will agree with Brian Gibson that if you're thinking it through, you do know that. You do know that it's a life and death issue. Joe Stoll has a great sermon that he gives about being a bystander. And he talks about the plaque that's at the Holocaust Museum in D.C. And it says, thou shalt not be a victim, thou shalt not be a perpetrator, and above all, thou shalt not be a bystander. He says the 11th commandment ought to be, thou shalt not be a bystander, because some say there's no such thing as an innocent bystander. You know, this is one of the things that we see. If you look at the culture of bullying in schools, that and it happens in the workplace, too, wherever bullying might happen, that there's a bully and then there's a victim, but there's this huge group of others that can sway the culture one way or the other. Because if the bystanders decide to become resistors or defenders or witnesses to the bullying, suddenly the strength in numbers goes differently and the bullying may come to an end, and come to an end very quickly. So to not be a bystander in those circumstances puts you really in the camp of the bully, right? What do you think? 1-800-811-3003. If it's true that abortion is the intentional killing of an innocent human being, which we know that is true because fetology tells us that from conception forward, the embryo is a distinct, living, and whole human being. If it's true that abortion is the taking of that innocent life, can you be a bystander to that? Is there a way to be neutral? 1-800-811-3003, our phone number to join us on the live feed, live stream that is, on My Faith Radio, myfaithradio.com. If you're not in one of our station listening areas, you can listen to the live stream online, myfaithradio.com, or leave a comment for us on our Facebook live video here at facebook.com, Kim Ketola, K-E-T-O-L-A, if you want to share it, invite your friends to hop on. I just would love to hear, and maybe you aren't pro, maybe you don't yet consider yourself pro-choice, or maybe you have changed your opinion. You used to be pro-choice, but or pro-life, that is. Maybe you have changed your opinion to feel differently. Whatever your stand, I would like to know how you came to it. How did you come to it? I'm fascinated by this thing about bystanders, because, of course, we can be bystanders when there's a crisis or a tragedy unfolding, not just bullying, right? There was a great article that I have kept in my archives, and I pull it out from time to time, that appeared in the Wall Street Journal back in 2012, and it was written by Sue Schallenbarger. And she outlined what it takes for bystanders to become heroes. You know, so if you're thinking, oh, I really should do something more for the cause of life, because, I mean, here's why this matters. 1 million children are dying every year in abortion, in legal abortion. You know, I have a friend who has a master's in public health, and he's pro-choice, but I asked him, if 1 million children were dying from some other cause, would that be considered a public health crisis? He said, absolutely. We'd want to be looking into those deaths. We'd want to be examining all the circumstances. We'd want to be seeing what we could do to prevent that, right? So if we started thinking about, you know, is there something you could be doing? Is there something you should be doing? Here are some of the things that have turned bystanders into heroes when an accidental scene was unfolding in front of their eyes. There's this great story in Sue Schallenberger's article about how empathy motivates us to become heroes. It turns us from bystanders into heroes. Lori Ann Eldridge is just an average woman, and I think she's actually kind of slight of build. She weighs about 115 pounds. She saw an elderly woman whose car was stuck on a railroad track, and there was a train approaching, the worst case scenario. And this lady looked like she was lost behind the wheel and helpless and, you know, elderly and frail. And so Lori Ann was barefoot and ran and pulled her out of that car, and they rolled down the railroad embankment at the very last minute before that car was crushed. And they said, Lori Ann, and she said, I just couldn't stand seeing her face. She said, she looked so lost and helpless. There was help needed. I could help. I went and helped. To me, empathy is a huge motivation for being pro-life, not just for the children who are perishing, but yes, for the women. Because, you know, my story was not a happy ending for me. It did not solve my problem. It gave me new problems in addition to having been a mother. So one of the other things that brings people from being bystanders to heroes is to have a positive outlook and expect a good outcome. Right. And I can see that if you're not pro-life and you're wondering, or if you are, but you're not sure how to take any action or what you could do, you might think, well, again, you know, maybe this isn't any of my business, or maybe I won't make any difference if you tell me 1 million people are dying every year in abortion, because that's the truth. You've got to love the story of Stephen St. Bernard. He sees a 7-year-old who's dancing around on an air conditioning unit 3 stories up as he's coming home from work and about to enter his apartment building. And he says, I thought maybe I can catch her. And sure enough, she slipped. And he said, I wasn't thinking about how much she weighed or what it was going to do to me when she landed in my arms. I was just thinking, God, please don't let me miss. And indeed, he caught her and it was about 600 pounds of force, and he needed surgery on both arms, you know, and loads of time-consuming and painful physical therapy. But he says, not a scratch on that baby. That is such an inspiring story because, yeah, it might cost you something. I mean, maybe you've got a stirring in your heart, but you don't want to speak up. You don't want to offend. Maybe you feel like this is going to be a really unpopular cause in your social circle. How does this go for you? Let me know. Drop a comment on our Facebook Live feed or call us at 1-800-811-3003 here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
Thank you so much for being with us tonight here on Faith Radio, 1-800-811-3003, the number to call. If you want to share a story about what has motivated you in your journey of being pro-life or pro-choice, I'd love to hear from you. Dawn says, glad you're following your calling. Thank you for that, Dawn. Good that you've joined us on the Facebook feed. Al, thank you for the encouragement from you, too. Go to Facebook.com if you're listening on Faith Radio and want to see the live video feed. You can go to Facebook.com/Kim Cattola. And our number for comment to join us live on the air is 1-800-811-3003. We're talking about what moves people to action, and not necessarily only on pro-life issues, but if you look at what has turned bystanders into heroes when there was a crisis or something life-threatening unfolding before them, and really the pro-life issue is a life and death issue. We've said that empathy can be something, an optimistic outlook, and believing that you can live up to a challenge that's in front of you. That's really important to move from being a bystander to becoming a hero. A sense of ethics overall, and having above average coping skills, belief in your ability to take challenges and beat the odds. Now, Sue Schallenberger tells the story of Navy nurse James Gennari. Oh my goodness, he stayed with a wounded Marine who had a live grenade embedded in his back, and he pledged to stay even though the bomb squad wasn't there yet and he was endangering his own life. He administered a sedative that allowed them to, that very delicate operation to take place. And there's something else that Nurse Gennari's story illustrates for us, which is that people who go from being bystanders to heroes are generally people who grew up seeing their parents stick their necks out for others. And so then they tended to do the same. Gennari says his dad taught him that every good thing that happens to you is a blessing, and you're supposed to give back. And he also said a man's word is the measure of his character. He told that Marine he wasn't going to leave him until he was safe. And he said, having said I would stay, that's the way it was going to be. So interesting to me, too, that there is research out there as to what happens when we don't step up and when we remain as bystanders, even though it's clear that there is a problem. Sometimes people feel physically incapable of help. They feel they lack the training they need to rescue. Sometimes people don't perceive the situation as an emergency. Maybe they just feel they don't know how to help. This was interesting to me. If you are in a good mood, you're more likely to think that your help is going to be effective and to step up. How about that? And being in a large crowd, the research said, shows that it's less likely that a hero will step up. This is called the bystander effect. But there's some new research on this that's also, I think, really fascinating. So the research came out of the Kitty Genovese case. Maybe you are familiar with that. She was murdered in New York City. And the New York Times reported that although there were 38 witnesses, no one came to her aid. Well, it turned out that wasn't true. These days, we would say it's an urban legend, and it started with very poor reporting. But so social scientists got to work studying why that would happen. Are people just that callous in urban environments, et cetera? What they found is that if one person sees somebody being mugged, they're likely to jump in. If there are five people, they're likely to look around and see what others are doing before they act. And if you're in a crowd of 85 people, nobody may do anything. But the tipping point is, and this is new research from Ken Brown, University of Iowa. He's got a TED talk about this. He said the tipping point is if one person steps up to move across the line from being a bystander to taking action. And you see the application for this with the pro-life cause, I hope. 1-800-811-3003 if you want to share your story with us. Marilyn says, a comment on Facebook, I have a husband, sister-in-law, and two children who are adopted. The journey of adoption definitely can be a motivator, yes, in the cause for pro-life. Because I know so many people who say, had my parent not placed me for adoption, I wouldn't have been here. They would have taken that other alternative. And that is very, very real. You know, there's something else that I want to talk with you about, too, in the time that we have remaining. And I want to, by the way, give you a quick program note that next week we are going to have Bruce Marciano on. He is the actor who played Jesus in that movie The Encounter with Jackie Velasquez. Great movie. I can't tell you anything about it if you haven't seen it, but I think it's on Netflix. But he has a new movie called Allison's Choice. And we're going to hear from Bruce the plot line of that story and his inspiration and some of the difficulties that he's had finding even a Christian distributor for the film. So be sure and join us next week here on Cradle My Heart Radio. But one of the other things that we've seen on people not getting involved is that ambiguity will keep us on the sidelines. If we're not certain that this really is a crisis, group cohesiveness, maybe we don't want to be the only person who says abortion is wrong, right? And then there's a diffusion of responsibility, that thing that I mentioned where people in a crowd say, well, if no one's doing anything, it must not be that bad. It seems to be what the psychology is, the crowd psychology. Bottom line, though, again, if only one person steps up, a crowd will rally. William Burroughs said, after all, there are no innocent bystanders. What are they doing there in the first place? Southern Poverty Law Center is not a group that I tend to agree with on a lot of their political stands on things, but they have a great article about bullying. And they say, as to the role of the bystander in a culture of bullying, that there are always bullies, victims, and bystanders, but there's always the possibility that a fourth character will arrive, the hero. Could play one of several roles, the defender, the resistor, the witness, and yes, the rescuer. And as we think about this, I urge you to go to Pro Life Action Ministries website and find out if rescue is something that God is calling you to, because it is a sacred calling and one that's difficult. I mean, I have prayed outside of abortion facilities. I felt it was really important to do that. I felt that was the least that I could do. And for a person who has had an abortion, it's extremely difficult to watch someone walk forward and not take the help that's given to them. And so I continue my prayer, but not at abortion facilities, just because of the personal difficulty for me with that. And I have other ways of expressing my support for the children yet to be born, for the cause of the unborn, and for the women who need our support and our real social presence, you know, to make the difference in their lives. But I'll tell you what, empathy, compassion, these are the things that change a culture of bullying, whether in the workplace or a school, and also in our culture. And those are the essentials of the Christian life. Of course, faith in Jesus Christ. But what does that bring about? Empathy and compassion. You know, my primary call is giving voice to God's love. His love for children yet to be born. His love for their mothers involved in that drama. And for us, bystanders, looking on, Jesus loves us all. And as I mentioned, Proverbs 26 says, like grabbing a dog by the ears, so is a bystander who gets involved in someone else's quarrel. But abortion is not some random argument. It is a matter of life and death. The most false thing of all the lies of Roe versus Wade is that the larger community, you and me, that we, who seem to be mere bystanders, have no interest in a pregnancy. You know, and because abortion is a matter of life and death, each of us have to search our hearts and ask if we're truly respecting the privacy of a woman or whether something else holds us back from standing up and speaking out to protect the children and provide for the needs of the women. And I'll tell you something else. It's very easy to go from bystander to victim in a heartbeat. We have that horrible story of the night that Jesus was betrayed when Peter went from defender to bystander. And I've had such a moment like that in my own life, and I pray it would never happen to you. I pray that you will go where love leads. I'm Kim Cotola. Thank you for joining us tonight. Remember, Jesus loves you. So do we. Thanks for listening. Your support makes this podcast stream possible. Information is available at myfaithradio.com.